This is February the 1st, 2024. Daphne Young's recording on behalf of the Rowlands Castle History and Heritage Society. The interviewee is Mrs. Mel Ainsworth, and this is recording number 2401. Over to you, Mel.
Right. Well, I'm quite old. I was born in 1940, and in the notes it said, have you got a memory of the war? Well, I was born in South Africa, so I don't really have memory of the war, except that we couldn't have white bread because the flour came from England. And so we had brown bread, which was very healthy. There were no ships going back and forth because they'd all been taken for troop ships, and it was far too expensive to fly at that stage. So when my father did decide they were coming back, we were coming back to England in 1947, he had to go on a troop ship. And it was quite difficult to find. He wanted to bring presents home for us because he just came on leave to look for jobs. And it was quite difficult to find presents. And on the ship, he suddenly realised he hadn't got a present for me. But because on this troop ship, it was very sparse and you didn't really get bedding, he had bought a big yellow and red pillow. And he thought, well, that's all I've got. I'll have to give Marianne that. And I loved this red and yellow pillow till it actually fell to bits. So it was the best present he could have found. We left South Africa when I was eight, seven and a half, and I have actual atmospheric memories more than real memories. There were atmospheres, so when we actually did do a trip back in the 1990s, it was very weird. For the first week, I felt quite unhinged by the atmosphere and the birds calling and the different sounds. And we did canoe down the Bushman's River, which was a river where we used to go every year on holiday. And all the sounds meant all the memories came flooding back. One memory is of Christmas. And Christmas was not so special because it wasn't winter. So a lot of the Christmas story didn't really make sense. But our Christmas was going off to the other side of Bushman's River in a rowing boat, and you could look down through clear, clear water and see enormous crabs on the sand at the bottom. We played outside all the time. It was a real lovely free childhood. We didn't wear shoes. We could go where we liked. We went into each other's houses. The doors were all open. And my father was a headmaster of a school, a boarding school. It was a Methodist school. And every Sunday, all the boys who had practiced their band on the big school field marched through the town, playing the band, a proper band with the great big drum with the leopard skin, and it was very exciting and rollicking, and all the little black children loved the music and ran and danced after the band, and so did we. I think we were the only white children who did, because other people didn't let their children do that sort of thing. Like, they didn't like their children to eat brown eggs or eat the brown porridge. We ate it, and I liked it much better than the horrible British porridge that had great big unsoft pieces of oats, because somehow it hadn't been cooked for long enough. So and another thing I remember is that we had the odd nanny while my mother played tennis. And of course, their English was very limited. So we did find going for walks with Nanny a bit boring. But there was one I particularly got fond of, and she got pregnant. She was called Florence, and she wrapped herself up so that you didn't know she was about to have a baby. And so she had the baby in our garden, and my mother actually delivered the baby. These things weren't all that unusual, I don't think. Or it might have been more unusual with other people because they'd have sent the nanny away as soon as they knew she was pregnant. So, and I remember deciding that I was going to put some of the workers had, the black workers had brought their children with them. And there was one very pretty little black girl, and I decided I would play with her. And I knew that it was a bit radical to play with a little black girl. I must have been only about five. And we did play with each other, and she was very sweet and smiley. But unfortunately, there was no real point of contact, so it sort of withered away. But it's interesting that I was very aware that it would be very nice to play with a black girl, because white children weren't really supposed to play with black children, because it was so separate. Anyway, then, and at that stage, when I was five or six, I was crazy to go dancing, and my little friend Marion went dancing, and my mother didn't approve because she said it wasn't a proper dancing school, so I wasn't allowed to go. But one day, Marion's mother knew my mother was out playing tennis. She came into the house and said, "I'm taking you with Marion to dancing." And I said, "Oh, but I haven't got any ballet shoes." And she said, "We'll take your slippers." So we went to dancing, and I stayed at dancing ever since and absolutely loved it. Then we came back to England, and first we lived with my grandparents in Bath. They lived in a large flat opposite the Royal Crescent, and three of us slept in our grandmother's and grandfather's four-poster bed. And one night I was ill, and I remember I wet the bed, and there was no fuss at all, even in this big four-poster bed with silk curtains. And then we moved to Kent, and we went to the local schools. I went to primary school first, and it had two rooms, a big room and a little room. But fortunately, I went into the big room because I was old enough by then to be in the big room. And if you were in the little room and you were naughty, I don't think the teacher was trained. She was a funny old lady. And so the children who were naughty in the little room had to stand on their chairs with a board duster over their heads. Which all sounds very archaic. Yeah, very Victorian. But at least I don't think anyone was hit. I don't think they were. And we managed to break out of the playground, which was just an asphalt playground, but there were woods outside the playground. We managed to somehow break through the fence and make camps and play, I think it was Dan Dare, which is the one that had Robin in it? Can't remember. Anyway, all the other children knew the games because they had comics. But we didn't have comics. My father didn't approve of comics. And so I had to pick up the stories we were playing, but it wasn't very difficult. And I refused to be a girl. I was always one of the fighting people. Which sounds like my grandchildren. Then we came back to England, and we lived in Kent, and my father thought it would be a good idea if we had a boat, because my younger sister had had polio, and so she couldn't play sport. Actually, I'm going to go back a little bit. On board ship, we had all sorts of things like running races and special fun days. And so there were big races and prizes on deck. And at one of the races, my younger sister, who had had polio and had a leg in a big caliper, was determined she was going to go in this race. And she ran like anything. She was so determined, and she was miles back from the others, but she was still terribly pleased she'd won it. And then when they gave out the prizes, she had the best prize. It was a great big white bunny. And she kept that bunny for ages, and she was in and out of hospital because in those days children stayed in for ages, and big bunny always went with her. That's not really a historical thing, but it's important. Someone said they'd got an old rotting boat on the mud on the Medway, and if we could wait till it was low tide and go and get the boat, we could have it. So my father got this boat home, and it was very leaky, so we spent ages tarring it. Interestingly, really the twins, my younger sister was a twin, so the twins were the ones really to do up the boat, because it was for Margaret. And so they tarred the boat like anything. I felt I couldn't really tar the boat because I hadn't got any trousers, I'd only got a skirt. And how can you tar a boat in a skirt? But that was my way of getting out of tarring the boat. Anyway, after that, we used to go down to the East Coast, where my aunt belonged to Walderingfield Sailing Club, which is near Woodbridge. And we sailed this boat with actually no knowledge. And we had three of us in the boat, me and the two younger sisters, the twins. So we had one helming, one crewing, and one bailing with a saucepan, because it leaked all the time. And the boat's name was Civvy. But that got us started on sailing. And really, after that, I crewed mostly for people. And then later, Margaret had a Firefly, and sometimes I would sail the Firefly. She probably had a cadet first and then a Firefly. So that was my beginning of sailing. I don't remember. I remember about the Festival of Britain. It was talked about a lot, but it was too expensive for us to go to. So, and also, I think my father had some sort of objection to it, but I can't remember what. I think he thought it should have had different things in it. Going on to when King George VI died, it was announced at school. I was then about 12, 1952, was it? Something like, yes, because the Queen's coronation was 1953. So I was 12, and we were all called into the school hall in the middle of everything, you know, middle of lessons and everything. We were called in, and it was announced that King George VI had died. And everybody was very admiring and grateful for the royal family, ever since they'd really done a lot of good works, looking after people and visiting bomb sites and things. So it was a big announcement for us, and lots of the girls cried. I was at a girls' school, and lots of the girls cried. Which I thought was a bit odd, because I thought, well, I don't know him personally. I don't think I feel like crying. But they did. You know, it reminds me a little bit of Princess Diana's, you know, sort of mass thing. And then when it came to the coronation, my father thought it was a good idea for us to go to London. He said, when you're old grannies, you'll have very happy memories of having gone to the coronation. We weren't all that excited about it. And we went traipsing up there with loads of blankets, because we didn't have sleeping bags in those days. We had blankets and umbrellas and some sort of pillows, I think, of some description. Anyway, we all found a place right near the front in the mall. And, of course, it rained. And so we lay on the pavement. And it would have been nice to have been in the park, back on the grass a bit. But no, we wanted to be as near as possible. So we were in the front row because we were staying all night. And there were bright lights all night. And people dancing Knees Up Mother Brown very raucously, which I didn't really approve of, and lots of pearly kings and queens about. So it was a wonderful atmosphere, but I was so tired. And when it came to the procession, it was so long. It went on and on and on. And I suppose there were masses of soldiers. I spoke to a friend of John's last night, and he said he was there. He is the same age as John, so he was 18, and he just went by himself. And he was by then in the army, but he didn't have to march, and I'm sure John didn't march. So, but there was a big army, so no wonder it all took such a long time. And the highlight was the Queen of... Well, I thought she was the Queen of Tonga, but I think she might have been someone else. And she was the only one in an open carriage, with loads of beads and bright things and waving and obviously looking, smiling and looking as if she was really enjoying all the crowds, and we enjoyed her. And I remember that it rained quite a lot, and the policemen all lined the mall, and the one in front of us had a big, well, they all had big cloaks. So my twin sisters were under the cloak, either side of the policeman, and I don't think that could happen today.
No.
So after this, after we'd gone, I remember my mother and I were so tired by the morning, and we could smell there was coffee somewhere. I'd never smelt such a wonderful smell. And so we walked till we found the coffee, and it was fresh coffee in a little shop. So we had this coffee and felt a bit better. And after it, I slept for 24 hours. At school, I played tennis. I played all sports. I loved sport. And we had wonderful times going to all the schools in the county and playing sport. And as soon as we got to another school, we saw their team, and we thought, they look such a funny lot. But then as soon as you'd played them, they were people. But at first, they looked so odd. And we always sang lustily on the way back in the coach. It was great fun. I'll have to have a little pause while I think, because I did have some stars somewhere. So this star is the last thing in the procession of the coronation was the golden coach. And this is something that Harry, I rang up last night, remembered, was that the coach was so tall. It was as high as a London bus. The men, you know, the footmen or whatever they are that drive the coach and sit at the back, stand at the back and the front, looked absolutely tiny. I didn't remember that, but I do remember seeing the Queen looking very pretty through the window. And Harry remembers two field marshals, who obviously didn't normally ride, had been put on horses, but they'd been given very, very quiet horses. And their trousers with red stripes down the side had shrunk so much they were halfway up their legs. So they didn't really have the proper clothes on. So then, I remember another thing about school. It was the Korean War in 1954, 50, in the 50s anyway. I'm trying to find where I put the Korean War. Yeah, here it is, 1953 plus I've put. So I must have been about 13 yet then. And at school we got very worried about all the soldiers. There was a lot on the wireless about the violence of the war. And we got very worried about the soldiers and we thought, what can we do? So we wrote little sort of messages to them, like little prayers really, and put them in balloons and crept up to the top of the school where we weren't supposed to be and let the balloons off. We knew really that the balloons weren't going to get to Korea, but we hoped that somehow these messages helped the soldiers, which of course is like prayer. I have to pause again now. Right, I went and did nursing training in London, quite an exhausting square bashing exercise, and fortunately at the end of the first year I belonged to a sailing club and rushed out of London on every possible opportunity, and there was John, and he was doing open meetings all over the country. He was by then working in industry and asked me to sail with him, and luckily I moved on to a ward where I had weekends off. It was just such a gift. And so we got married, had the three little children while he worked in Devon, and then we came to Rowlands Castle. And it was a very, very quiet village. We went into the post office and got glared at, and nobody spoke. There were two ladies in there, and they didn't speak to us for several years, except to buy a stamp. 1969.
1969, you came to Rowlands Castle.
Yeah, the end of 1969.
How old would your children have been
there? They were 5 and 3 and 9 months. And we found it a very quiet, rather nice place. Went for walks in the woods with the children, went pond dipping in our special pond place, and enjoyed the environment. But as far as shops were concerned, there was one little dress shop, which was very useful if you ran out of children's knickers and things like that, or bits of material, or haberdashery. And there was one little tiny shop in the flat next to the spa shop, the Blondie's shop, and also a grocer's shop where the flats are at the bottom of Bowes Hill. So the grocer's was very useful because they had everything you might need, and you could get your bread there, except there was a bread man. There were lots of deliveries coming, like bread and milk, can't remember. Don't think fruit and veg. I think people were mostly growing their own fruit and veg, or it was in the shop. And the little shop next to the Londis was owned by the two Miss Mileses, who were very stern, large ladies. And they had sweets. I think it was sort of a tobacconist's, but they had more or less everything there. And they had sweets. So the children would take their pennies down to get on Saturday to get sweets. And they were very fierce and said, come on, choose. And of course the children took ages choosing because they didn't often have sweets. So it was all a bit of an ordeal. But when I needed a pen nib for my fountain pen, Miss Miles vanished into the back of the shop, shuffled through lots of boxes and found exactly the one that fitted my pen. There were no groups in the village, really. There were no toddler group or anything like that. So you tended to make friends and go and have a cup of coffee with a friend, with your child. But there was a nursery school, which was at Beechwood. Most of the children went to the nursery school. So you met quite a lot of people there. So when John had to go away, he went to Spain for a long work programme, hunting for snails. the children and I went to my parents for a bit in Suffolk. Or when we were here, we would go one day to the woods and one day to the beach. And so we were in a good place. Then I remember the village fair, which started, and I can't remember exactly when it started, but new people moved into Deer Leap House and they started the village fair. And it was very special. Each child was given 50p or whatever was the equivalent of 50p and an ice cream. So it felt really dramatic for the children, and they all dressed up and did fancy dress, and it was a really special day. And even now, the family that are left, my son and his wife, that are left in the village, still live in the village, they meet their friends at the village fair from when they were young. So it's a great thing. The other thing my children used to do was to go to the brickworks. We went for a walk to the brickworks at first, and it was quite amazing. It was as if it had just been left like the Marie Celeste in one day. There were trucks ready to go into the kilns with soft bricks on, trucks ready to come out that have already been fired. The whole thing was a working museum, really, and it's such a pity that we didn't realise at that stage in the 1960s that it would be a good thing to save it.
Because everybody was trying to save up for
the vegetation around the schooling, the brickworks, was not grown up. So our children used to go there frequently,
each to separate schools,
with their friends,
which was not a good idea.
Roll down the meant that I was careering about
clay hill
and come back picking them up from all over the place.
But somehow they got educated. With the stone trucks
in the stone, and as far as joining clubs and things,
that went right the way up.
If you weren't really on the ball, putting your children down very early for clubs, you couldn't get in for a long time. So first they wanted to join the swimming club. By the time they got in, they'd lost interest, and the same with gymnastics. So it wasn't easy. Kate's real desire was riding, and there was a little pony up the hill in a field up Bowes Hill. It wasn't all houses, there was a field, and even from the age of three we'd think, where's Kate? And she would be up the hill having taken a carrot out of the larder, and she would be up the hill talking to Freddie. So eventually, after riding lots of people's ponies and finding ponies to borrow or have riding lessons, we did get one. And that was great fun, having that. And she could ride around the village. And I remember one time when she did get a big horse that was a bit sparky, and it didn't like Land Rovers. And a Land Rover was coming towards her. And so the pony was called Puff. He jumped over the fence and upset several old ladies having a tea party in their garden. But they were all terribly nice about it. And she apologised.
Can I ask Mel, where did you keep this pony?
Well, first of all, we kept it out at Finchdean, at the garden house. Because Lady, whatever her name was, she kept it, is still on. She had horses, and you were allowed to pay to keep your horse there. And then at the fields at the end of the drift, up at the end of the drift, and that was very convenient.
Yes.
So, and I must say, Kate had, before she had a pony, she'd gone with a bigger girl, whose name I won't say, and there were other ponies around in fields, and they had got on them and careered around fields on them. So that was quite interesting. The boys were heavily into sailing by this time. So we did get a bit divided because John was always at the sailing club. We were all at the sailing club a lot. When they were little, we were down there on the beach. So they were brought up on the beach, which was lovely. And then once the riding started, we did get a bit divided. I did try going to church with the children because I thought that was a good thing. But I came out thinking, well, we didn't get very far. We're better off on the beach. And I didn't start going to church till my eldest son came home from college and said, I'm a Christian now. And I thought, what are you talking about? We're all Christian. You know, it's almost everyone's been brought up Christian in England. And he said, well, come to church with me. We were down at the sailing club. I had to leave. He must have had a car. So I left the car keys. John was out on the water. I left the car keys on the wheel arch, thinking he'll think of that. Went off with Tom in holy jeans, which I thought wasn't at all appropriate for church. But when I got there, we were in a big old sort of barn with lots of young people, didn't matter what you had on. So church was quite different from what I'd ever experienced. And it was there that I really felt the power of God. So from then on, gradually I joined the church. The social life in the village has become far more vibrant. In the past, there were village dances. We played tennis, mostly up at Lord Besborough's tennis court, where he allowed us to share the court with him. And if he was playing with his friends, they would finish their set for us to play and vice versa. So we would have lots of little tennis games and take drinks and little picnics. And it was lovely working up playing up there, because the children could run about, and there were quite a lot of cages of foreign vibrant birds. I can't remember what they were. It would be frowned upon now that these exotic birds were kept in cages, but that's what happened then. And then the tennis club became acquired in the rec. And so slowly, as the tennis club at Lord Besborough's became less and less popular and the court needed doing up, we all changed and went to the and played in the rec. And it's still a very vibrant tennis club now, with lots of events, and they now play matches, but quite a lot of us just play for fun. And Katie Rowley started the silver tennis, which is for people who are older and going a bit slower, and so I join in that. And so it's a very vibrant part of village life. Mm. And now there's pickleball, which is a cross between badminton and tennis and ping pong in the village hall. So there's lots going on in the village hall. But one of the major things that happened was the NSPCC Christmas fair, and all the children in the village school would come and sing. And the local lovely midwife would have tears running down her face and point, I delivered that one, and I delivered that one, and I delivered that one. And she would know all the children in the village, and her children went to the village school as well. They also had talent tests. We had a talent test that Lizzie Gradage ran, a talent show. Yes, and there was so much talent in the village. It was. I can't remember the acts, but they were riveting. And the children had talent show each year from the school and played their violins and whatever else they did. Sally the midwife is a very local girl with a father who worked in the George Staunton estate as a gardener and a mother who worked there as well. And their mother, Carol, has been a very vibrant member of the coffee mornings at the Church on the Green. So much is going on in the village now. It's burgeoned out since the U3A. There's so many clubs of poetry, book clubs, sport, you name it. I think we've got practically every club there is. And the village is a very vibrant place to live. So many young people who were brought up in the village have wormed their way back into living in the village, including one of my sons and his family. His children have been very happy at the village school and have so many local friends. They're always out with somebody. Other things have grown up, which I haven't talked about, which is the church. I didn't bother to go to church when the children were little. It felt irrelevant. And then my son went to university, came back saying he was a Christian, and I thought, well, we're all Christians. But he got me to his young, vibrant church, and I've never looked back. And I have very close friends from all the house groups and activities that we've done in the church. And the latest thing that I've been involved with is circle dancing, which we have in the church hall, which is such a friendly group, bringing all the community together. Amen.
Thank you very much, Mel.